found out very young when I first started singing my songs for people when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, that people would listen to my feelings, my fears, my sadness, if I sang it to them. They wouldn't listen if I just said it. And it was a way to release it. And it was a strengthening. Come to my window, I'll be home soon. I'll be home, I'll be home, I'll be home. Hi, this is Melissa Etheridge in the studio for Yes, I Am.
The story of Melissa Etheridge would make a great black and white classic movie. You know, where the small town Midwestern girl with the big heart and even bigger voice combines talent and sheer determination to rise from the Kansas Kiwanis Club talent shows to the stage of the Grammy Awards. And from $6 in lounge tips to 6 million copies sold. Melissa Etheridge recalls discovering music at a very early age while growing up in Leavenworth, Kansas.
Yeah, very much so. Everybody that was there worked either at the Hallmark candle factory or the prison. And my parents worked, my father worked at the high school, and my mother worked on the army base as a civil servant. The music that I remember was the music on the record player. And my parents, they were not terribly hip, but they did buy a few records, and that it ranged from Simon and Garfunkel to Neil Diamond, Mamas and the Papas. I remember they bought that, loved that. And then my sister, she was 4 years older than me, and she was a big influence when I was younger. She would go out and buy these crazy bands like Led Zeppelin, you know, and George Harrison's All Things Must Pass, you know, And I would end up stealing those and listening to those. So that was my earliest musical influences. I was listening. I had my own little 45, portable 45 record player. And we would listen. I would listen to Steppenwolf and the Tommy James and the Shondells and a lot of that type of pop rock. And I would gather my friends together when I was about 7 or 8. And we'd all gather in the basement and we'd play like we were a band, and I would bounce around with the tennis rackets or the badminton rackets, and I was playing guitar. And I don't remember whether I asked him or whether he just thought maybe I might like it, but one day my dad came home with a little guitar and said, "You want to try the real thing?" I said, "Cool," and took lessons. And I remember learning chords, and I remember learning A, D, and E. And the minute I learned that third chord, it was like the heavens broke and I realized that was a song. Three chords was a song, and I said, "This is it. This is music. This is what it's all about." And I remember just playing those three chords over and over and just making up things. And it just seemed very natural to just make up things. And I would write them down, and they were very juvenile, but those were the first songs that I would write. I was 10 years old.
Go on and close your eyes. Go on, imagine me there. She got similar features with longer hair. And if that's what it takes to get you through, go on and close your eyes. It shouldn't bother you. Never had to wait for nothing in your life. I guess wanting me must have been a steel blue knife. And when night after night the scent of passion would linger, you had to have the jewels wrapped around your finger. Now you keep running down the road in your midnight state of mind. Curiosity kills if you can. She got similar features with longer hair. And if that's what it takes to get you through, go on and close your eyes. It shouldn't bother you. Dancing with a wall made you bitter and sweet. There ain't much you can do when they just lay it at your feet. But could you tell by the song I wanted to be the one? Did you listen again when the damage was done? Now the paint's still wet in your do-it-by-number dream. Are you gonna tell me how it felt? Will you tell me want with no desire? Was it smoke with no fire? Did I say it doesn't rip me apart? I lied. I'm sorry. She got similar features with longer hair. And if that's what it takes to get you through, go on and close your eyes. It shouldn't bother you. Close your eyes. Imagine me there. She's got similar features with longer hair. And if that's what it takes to get you through,
Remarkably, you heard her say she wrote her first song at 10, and shortly thereafter performed it at a talent show in the Leavenworth Mall. Melissa seemed internally motivated to perform.
Well, it's interesting. I think back at that time, I can't remember any women that I wanted to be like. Linda Ronstadt was probably the closest. I didn't see it like I wanted to be somebody else. So, I wanted to be me. I wanted to, you know, I would watch the Ed Sullivan Show and I saw the Rolling Stones sing on that. And I thought, I want to do that. You know, I don't want to sing like Mick Jagger, but I want to do what they're doing. No, I never did any backup singing. And it's interesting because nowadays I get thrown into, I have the opportunity to, like, you know, sing with people or sing backup. And I'm very inadequate at it because I never got the opportunity to do it. I don't believe I was ever thrown into that sort of situation where I was a decoration or any kind of, you know, something else other than a complete member of the band. And that is what I used to do because I could play guitar, I could play keyboards, I could play bass, I could play drums. I played all of the instruments and I was you know, always contributed as a full member, so I never felt like I was the chick singer at all. Is it so? You found out to love me. You have to climb some fences, scratching and crawling along the floor to touch you. And just when it feels right, you say you found someone to hold you. Does she like I do? Baby, tell me, does she love you like the way I love you? Does she stimulate?
just to kiss you like the way I do. Tell me, does she want you, infatuate and haunt you? Does she know just how to shock you, electrify and rock you? Does she inject you, seduce you and affect you like the way I do? Like the way I do. Even if I tried, could you be less than an addiction? Don't you think I know? There's so many others who would beg, steal, and lie, and fight, kill, and die just to hold you.
Ask me all the time, you know, boy, was it hard being a woman? And I thought, I think, no, I always had the opportunities and met the challenges and did it. And I never really had a bad experience like that.
Like a real-life Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, Melissa Etheridge would soon find herself far from Kansas and on her own.
It's interesting because I had the long-term dream and a real desire for that and not a clue as how to get there at all. I figured Los Angeles was the place that would get me there. I remember graduating high school and going, yikes, what do I do? I remember it was my father who said, you should play solo. You should play by yourself and go get work. And I had always played in bands, and the thought of just me by myself was just frightening. But I went down to the local Leavenworth Ramada Inn and asked them if they wanted entertainment in the lounge, and they thought that was a novel idea. And I got a job playing, you know, 5 nights a week for about $25 a night. And sang whatever anybody wanted to hear. And I learned to do that. So then when I went to college in Boston, I went to a music college. My parents also wanted me to do that. I had to get a job, and I was kind of afraid. So I got me a regular security guard job. And I remember about 3 weeks onto it, I went, now, wait a minute. I can do something else and make money. I can sing and make money. And it was very clear that that's what I wanted to do. And so I started playing solo in lounges and restaurants and bars.
Please give us a rousing welcome to Miss Melissa Etheridge and her outstanding band.
I had to get on with my life, meaning my social life, certainly. And while I was looking for work in Los Angeles, I was also, you know, visiting the women's bars, trying to make friends and find community And I did, and I met some people that took me down to Long Beach, to this, you know, this great bar in Long Beach. And when I went there, I noticed they had a piano in the corner. And I said, oh, do you, you know, you have live music? They said every now and then. I said, well, can I come in and audition? And I auditioned, and they loved it. And I ended up fully employed 5 nights a week, fully employed in not only that bar, but another bar in Pasadena. I made quite a name. And over that 4 years, I made a living. I created a following in the gay community. And it was in those bars that Chris Blackwell of Island Records found me, saw me, signed me. Chris Blackwell is an amazing human being, and it's hard to ever really tell what he's thinking. He's English, but he was born and raised in Jamaica, and he discovered reggae and people like Cat Stevens and U2, and he's just an amazing human being. He came in, saw me. This is after years of other record companies going, oh, well, I don't know, I don't hear the hit, blah, blah, blah. And he came in, he heard 4 songs, and I met with him, and he said, I think you're a great rock and roll artist, and I believe that the future of rock and roll has a female face, and I want you on my label.
So weak, but all in love is fair. I turn you the cheek, and I feel the slap and the sting of the foul night air. And I know you're only human, and I haven't got talking room. But tonight, while I'm making excuses, some other woman is making love to you. Somebody bring me some water. Can't you see I'm burning alive? Can't you see my baby's got another lover? I don't know how I'm gonna survive. Somebody bring me some water. Can't you see it's out of control? Baby's got my heart and my baby's got my mind. But tonight the sweet devil's got aching pass. Will this night be through? Wanna hear the breaking glass. I wanna feel the steel of the red hot truth. And I'd do anything to get it out of my mind. I need some insanity of that temporary kind. Tell me, how will I ever be the same when I know that that woman is whispering your name? Somebody bring me some water. Can't you see I'm burning alive? Can't you see my baby's got another lover? And I don't know how I'm gonna survive. Somebody bring me some water. Can't you see it's out of control? Baby's got my heart and my baby's got my mind. But tonight the sweet devil
Welcome back in the studio with Melissa Etheridge for a look at the album Yes I Am. I'm Redbeard. It's a wonder Melissa Etheridge was even signed to a major label in 1987, in spite of, as she puts it, quote, not having the word gun in my name, end quote. Remember, Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, Whitesnake, and Guns N' Roses were all the rage, and MTV Unplugged had not yet made the acoustic guitar cool again. Nevertheless, Melissa Etheridge received quite a boost when her debut album received a Grammy nomination.
I tell you, that first Grammy nomination was a huge step for me, and I gladly admit that my first record was doing okay. It was okay for a first record. Then all of a sudden, I got this Grammy nomination, just one little nomination for Best Rock Female Vocal, and it was for 1988. It was 1989 by now. I had already started working on my second record. I just thought everything was over. And it was also this great year of some great female rock artists, Sinead O'Connor, Tony Childs, Tracy Chapman, and the Grammys were like, oh, let's bring them all on. So I got not only got the nomination, but the opportunity to sing my song on the Grammys. And the next week after I sang the song, my sales went through the roof and gave a whole new life to that first album. Yeah. That song was definitely an every woman's song. It was my attempt at broadening outside of myself and sort of taking in the whole experience that I've seen around me, the women that I've known, the women that I haven't known, that I've just seen. And I really wanted to bring it together in this song and give this working woman, this struggling woman, this fighting woman, give these women a realistic anthem to sing, to feel. I get great response from it. There's a lot of women that really appreciate it. I get great mail, period, just from people that love the emotions and the feelings and the music. But All American Girl, it's a real fist pumper thing. It's great to see women kind of relate to it.
I asked Melissa Etheridge, who wrote her first song at 10 years old, mind you, if she had by now a definite songwriting regimen.
Not really, no. There isn't a great amount of discipline to writing because I started so young that it always felt like it was there. And all I needed was solitude to write. I just needed to be alone. I could do it anywhere. I wrote a lot of Yes, I Am on the road. And I wrote a lot of Your Little Secret on the road. I like writing on the road because it's a very... A hotel room can be a real comfortable place. If I'm hungry, I order room service and, everything's right there for me. And I'm undisturbed. And I take all the things I've stored in my head, all the inspirations, all the moments and fears, and I pull them out at that time and I write them down. That's where the storing of inspiration comes with me. I can be home, I can be... Something can happen, something I can feel, and I'll take that and I'll go, okay, remember this. This is an inspiration. Let's, maybe I'll jot something down at the time. But then when I get that moment on the road, on the bus, in the hotel room, I can write it down. And it's not a road song. It's a life song. And when I'm performing and those juices are flowing and I'm playing the concert, and sometimes even I think, right here would be a good time for this kind of song. And I think about that and I'll go back and I'll think about writing that song. And I'm basically working on the perfect set list is what I'm doing. So I just have the perfect concert. I'm aware of where the audience is at. And if I've reached a certain point and I think, oh my goodness, we could go even higher, but I don't have that song to take us higher, I think, I gotta write that song. I gotta write that one that's gonna just throw them over the edge.
I would dial the numbers just to listen to your breath. And I would stand inside my hell and hold the hand of death. You don't know how far I'd go to ease this precious ache. And you don't know how much I'd give or how much I can take. Just to reach you, just to reach you. Giving away promises I know that I can't keep. Nothing fills the blackness that has seeped into my chest. I need you in my blood, I am forsaking all the rest. Just to reach you, just to reach you. They think
from Yes I Am, Melissa Etheridge's 1993 6 million seller. Melissa Etheridge was allowed to patiently build a following over the course of 4 albums on the same music label, a rarity in today's music biz. Melissa has a theory on why other labels don't always nurture a musician's career.
Well, I think business people came into the record business, and it's much harder to find music people. I'm real fortunate that my label is headed by Chris Blackwell, definitely a music man, who through his music choices has earned lots of money. But it's on the supporting of acts like U2, which took 4 or 5 albums to get, you know, to Joshua Tree. He believes in that. He sees it. He sees the long run. But you get some of the business people in some of these record companies now, and they don't. They see the money they can make right now on this, and they put it all into that first artist, and then they sort of leave him out to fend for themselves, and it's really tough because you can get a lot of heat off of the next big thing and the new thing and the trend thing of right now, and they just get used to that tool, that sort of new heat, and don't nurture anymore, and that's really tough. Oh, sure, here I am, you know, in this day and age of you got to be trendy, you got to be hip, you got to be of the alternative sort of Lollapalooza crowd, you know, and I was never really invited to that party, and that's okay, because that party's over now, and I'm still here. I am as alternative as you get. I've got it right down the road.
Smoke, drink, swear, and I would never go. I would.
From Melissa Etheridge in the album Yes I Am, that's If I Wanted To. You'll find out just how much she wanted to make it. Coming up, Melissa reveals why she risked her career by coming out with an announcement concerning her private life. In the studio, next.
Hi, this is Melissa Etheridge in the studio for Yes I Am.
Welcome back. I'm Redbeard. Leading up to the release of Yes, I Am in 1993, Melissa Etheridge had shown concern for her growing legion of fans, care for her craft, and expressed a depth of passion when the best many rockers could muster was indifference. Melissa's maturity allowed her to explore adult themes honestly in her songs, but her own personal experiences in an often hypocritical society kept her from moralizing too much in her songwriting. I asked Melissa Etheridge why, prior to Yes I Am's release, she took the risk of going public on her sexual orientation.
I would get asked personal questions because my songs are personal, because I always tell people that I'm writing from a very truthful point, and it's real, and it makes people want to know more about me personally. And it was getting harder and harder to keep them out. They would notice. Because I wasn't going to lie to them. I wasn't going to talk about a boyfriend or anything because I'm just not going to lie. And it was getting harder and harder to sort of keep them out of that area without feeling like I was misleading people. And it was very important for me to be truthful, and I didn't know what it would be like. And I basically just agreed to answer the questions that they asked, and that was sort of my coming out, was that, okay, you can ask me, and I'll tell you. And I did, and it's actually been a very good experience. Everyone I ever knew or worked with personally knew about my sexuality. I was very open. I mean, I was discovered in women's bars. It was very easy to find out my history. Just no one really needed to know enough to go look. It was always something that I discussed with Chris Blackwell at the very beginning, and he said, you know, it's just... You know, do you need to flag wave? Do you know how to do that? I didn't at that time. I was young. I was just starting. I didn't know how to do it. So I said, look, I'm never going to lie about this, but I'll just kind of just choose not to talk about it. And then as the couple years went by, I told my management, I said, look, there's going to be a time, and this is getting to the point where I'm going to do that. And they said, well, all right. No one ever told me not to, and I didn't even know at the time that I did it I was going to do it, and it just sort of became that. It was actually after Never Enough. It's kind of during the end of Never Enough. I just got fed up with it all and said, this is ridiculous. I have to be myself more. And it was actually in January, right before I even made Yes I Am, and it was at the Clinton inauguration, and a great place to come out. I was at the what was called the Triangle Ball, which is the gay and lesbian ball, one of the inaugural balls. And I was surrounded by my friends and all these great, happy, you know, people that, you know, we were finally getting recognized, you know, as a community. And I just said, oh, well, I'm proud to be a lesbian. You know, wee, and whoops, it was in the paper, you know, the next day. And there you go. And I said, well, you know what? I'm just going to go with it. I am, and I'll just answer the questions now. I know that it gave me extra press, and in this day and age, you know, any press is press, you know, and I totally acknowledge that it gave me a leg up in with this album, and it gave me time for the music to take hold. I also believe the karmic sort of spiritual side of it, that if you clear yourself of this luggage, of this baggage, and put it out there and say, you know what, this is the truth, this is me, and this is the honesty, the what I am, and you put it out there and I no longer have to carry it, it opens up more space for greater energy and greater things to happen. And for me to make that growth and move on up, I had to get rid of that.
Tonight you told me that you ache for something new.
borrow and wrestle the sorrow that holds you down today. Go on and hold until the screaming is gone. Go on, believe her when she tells you nothing's wrong.
Stuff from Melissa Etheridge. That's I'm the Only One. When first released, Melissa was vague as to whether she was the object of obsession or the obsessive one.
I think I was probably so much in the middle of it that I didn't want to tell you at the time. It is personal, and it is it has a bit of truth. It was written a bit after the fact, which was something that I tend to do, that something that's so intense to me can be written after I sort of resolve it. But, you know, yes, this was true, but everything's okay now, that sort of thing. It's an intense part of me. It's a very obsessive, jealous part of me that I don't like to own up to very often. But that's the truth.
Jokingly, I asked Melissa Etheridge which was more controversial, coming out or going blonde?
I think the sexual orientation won out over that, but boy, the going blonde almost ruined my career. That just, I tell you, they just had a fit, those fans. What is she doing? But they seem to, you know, they're fine with it now, I guess. If I went dark again, oh, what's she doing? You know, whatever you do, whenever you change anything, they get worried. There are times when I am faced with decisions or things that maybe I should do or shouldn't do, and I think to myself, okay, what would Bruce Springsteen do? What would U2 do? These are careers that are strong, that are respected, and you sort of go with the flow. They wave, they come in and out, they wax and wane, and they're still there. And Elton John, you know, he goes through all different kind of phases, and you can still do a concert and they'll come out and see him because he's got those songs. And those are the people that are here and are part of our musical history, and I would like in 15, 20 years to be thought of that way, that I have a body of work, that I have affected American music. I constantly think about how long and will I be able to do this at this level that I'm doing it right now, and there's certainly a lot of fear about it. I see a lot of artists struggling. I see a lot of artists just disappear, and I look to myself, I look inside myself and go, yes, there's a fear about this, but I have to believe that as long as I make the music sincerely, as long as it's a part of me and a truthful part of me, and that rings through the music, there will be the people that want that and listen to that and will support it and come see me, and I can do what I love to do.
You may be surprised to find that Melissa's original motivation to write Lonely Child at age 10 has not really changed.
I found out very young when I first started singing my songs for people when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, that people would listen to my feelings, my fears, my sadness, if I sang it to them. They wouldn't listen if I just said it. And it was a way to release it. And it was a strengthening way. And I got this great response and reinforcement over and over that just encouraged me to keep doing that. And now every night what you see in front of these thousands of people is me just reaching in and pulling it out and sharing it with everyone and them doing it also and leaving lighter.
Why did you steal the matches from the one-room motel? Once they gave you answers, now they give you hell. They will never understand. They wonder, where did they go wrong? How could you be so selfish? Why can't you get along? And as you pray in your darkness for wings to set you free, you are bound to your silent legacy. You've seen it in the movies and heard it on the street, craving the affection, your blood is full of heat. They don't listen to your reasons, as original as sin. Deny all that you feel and they will bring you home again. And as you pray in your darkness for wings to set you free, you are bound to your silent legacy. What you feel, the empty aching hours trying to conceal. The natural progression is the coming of your age, but they cover it with shame and turn it into rage. And as you pray in your darkness for wings to set you free, you are bound to your silence. To keep you humble, keep you low. So mad at me, they made up a thousand years ago. And as you pray in your darkness for wings to set you free, you are bound to your silent legacy. Tell your children, be quick, you must be strong. Life is full of wonder, love is never wrong. Remember how they taught you, how much of it was fear. Refuse to hand it down, the legacy stops here. Oh, oh!
powerful stuff. That's Silent Legacy by Melissa Etheridge from the album Yes, I Am. That aching, elongated scream near the end caught her band by surprise in the studio.
That was recorded live with the band. That whole scream and everything, we kept that from the original tracking of the song. Actually, most of that song is, I think, except for the guitar overdubs, that's all original. That's another interesting arrangement story, because I'd originally wanted the song to just fade out and it just sort of, you know how it kind of gets low in the end, just sort of fade out very low. I had no intention to bring it back up and scream and holler and everything. But we were in the studio and we were cutting it, and it was a heartfelt take, and there was something very special going on, and you just know when the real thing is happening, when the magic is there and the intensity is there. And when I record with the bass and drums and guitar and myself, and I can see them and they're looking at me, and we're kind of starting to, it's building back up just on its own, and we're starting to do it, and I'm just singing, and we get to that point, and I'm thinking the only way I can really tell these guys what I want to do is just scream. And so I just let all this stuff that was building in me just screamed, and the band took it as a cue to, you know, let it all out, and we just took it really high and went on out with it.
Don't be afraid. Close your eyes. Lay it all down. Don't you cry. Can't you see I'm going where I can see the sunrise? I've been talking to my angel, and he said that it's all right. I've always had to run. I don't know just why. Desire slowly smoking under the Midwest sky. But there's something waiting out there that says I've got to try. I've been talking to my angel, and he said that it's all right. This town thinks I'm crazy. I just think I'm strange. Sometimes they want to own me, sometimes they wish I'd change. But I can feel the thunder underneath my feet. Well, I sold my soul for freedom. It's lonely but it's sweet. Don't be afraid. Close your eyes. Lay it all down. Don't you cry. Can't you see I'm going where I can see the sunrise? I've been talking to my, said that it's all right.
That one is, in some respects, about leaving Kansas with that $1,000 car and going to Los Angeles and leaving behind that part of me that was grew up there, and leaving behind a lot of people that I knew, and changing and shedding that and you know, becoming something new, and it was also about losing my father. He died a couple years before I wrote that, and it was sort of about life and death, and about just metamorphose and moving on and not to worry about it, and those things change, and you know, you have your angel, your muse, your inspiration.
Talking to My Angel, from Melissa Etheridge and the album Yes I Am. I'm Redbeard, Yes I Am, and we'll be back in the studio after this.